On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Brian Chee and Mr. Curtis Franklin here today. Now, we talk a lot about remote work and your new network perimeter. Well, home Wi-Fi might be your weakest link. We'll definitely talk about that. Now, ransomware operators are getting crafty with their attacks, and they're using social engineering and exploitation to make sure they get paid. We'll talk about that. Plus, we have a great guest today. He's had an amazing journey in the tech industry, and now he's focusing on identity and passwordless worlds. Tom Jamrolek, he is here. He's co-founder and CEO of Beyond Identity, and he's here to talk about tackling some of the major challenges around identity and just how you can join the revolution. Shouldn't miss it. It's Wyatt on the Set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 441, recorded April 30th, 2021. Passwordless authentication. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Veeam Backup and Replication V11. V11 has over 200 new features and enhancements in a 4-in-1 solution, combining backups, replicas, and more under one reliable solution. Eliminate data loss and ransomware with Veeam Backup and Replication V11 with a free unlimited 30-day trial. Just go to vee.am/twit and find out why Veeam is simple, flexible, and reliable. Ambi, Bitwarden. Get the password manager that offers a robust and cost-effective solution that can drastically increase your chances of staying safe online. Get started with a free trial of a Teams or Enterprise plan, or try it for free across all devices as an individual user at bitwarden.com/twit. Ambi, Audible. Audible is the leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Delve into your next title on Audible with Audible Plus. New members can try Audible Plus for 30 days. Download the Audible app and get started with a free trial at audible.com/Twyatt or text Twyatt to 500-500. Welcome to Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that's dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and the geek who just wants to know how this world is connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through this big giant world of the enterprise, but I definitely can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals, the experts in their field, starting with our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. He's a senior analyst at Omdia. Curtis, how is the Sunshine State treating you?
Oh, things are good here in the Sunshine State, nice and warm. We're just enjoying life before the start of hurricane season. Plenty of time to do research into the security market and get ready for another great episode of Twyatt.
Thanks for being here, Curtis. I'm also looking forward to the Black Hat coverage. When's that coming up?
Well, Black Hat comes up the end of July and beginning of August. And right now, it looks like things are moving forward. There's a lot of what I'll call cautious optimism in the industry that this is going to be a step back in the direction of getting together face-to-face. We don't know how much of it precisely is going to be that way versus the online conference that will still be a real thing this year. But like I said, cautious optimism that we're going to see at least a baby step in the direction of normal this year.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it. Well, speaking of the Sunshine State, we also have to have on Mr. Brian Chee. He's net architect at Sky Fiber. Cheebert, how are the new digs?
It's getting there. The room that I'm in, you know, my new office is a little bouncy. So I found this really cool thing from Bubo's Corporation. It's a world map from the 1800s. So it's got that sepia tone look, and it's actually acoustic insulation. So that's going to be my background. And in front of me, I'm going to have Earthrise from Tranquility Base. Ought to be interesting.
Very cool. Well, folks, we should get started because we have a lot of content to cover today. It's been quite the week in the enterprise. Now, we've talked a lot about remote work and just how you have to think about your new network perimeter. Well, home Wi-Fi might be a weak link in that new perimeter. We'll definitely get into this with the group. Plus, ransomware operators are getting crafty with their attacks, and they're using social engineering and exploitation to make sure they get paid. We'll talk about it. Plus, we have a great guest today. He's had an amazing journey in the tech industry, and now he's focusing on identity and the passwordless world. Tom Jarmolek's here, co-founder and CEO of Beyond Identity, to talk about tackling some of the major challenges around identity and just how you can join the revolution. But before we do, let's go ahead and jump into this week's blips. But during the pandemic, gaming has been at an all-time high. I, in fact, actually built a 32-core RTX 3800 machine last year, but what if I told you that you might not be able to trust the drivers you need for your GPU? Well, NVIDIA has disclosed a group of security vulnerabilities in the NVIDIA GPU display driver, which could subject gamers and others to privilege escalation attacks, arbitrary code execution, denial of service, and information disclosure. Doesn't sound good to me. Well, meanwhile, the NVIDIA virtual GPU software has a bug group that could lead to a range of similar attacks. Now, the most severe of the five bugs in the GPU display driver is tracked at CVE-2021-1074, which rates at 7.5 out of 10 on the CVSS vulnerability scale, making it pretty severe. It exists in the display driver's installer and allows an attacker with local system access to replace an application resource with malicious files. Now, such an attack may lead to code execution, escalation of privileges, denial of service, or even information disclosure. Now, another high severity bug, the CVE-2021-1075, rates at 7.3. Now, NVIDIA's Windows GPU display driver for Windows, which may lead to code execution, denial of service, or escalation privileges. Sounds familiar? Now, there's also two medium security flaws, both rated at 6.6. That's 1076 and 1077 on the CVEs. Now, these may lead to denial of service, information disclosure, and, of course, data corruption. Meanwhile, NVIDIA's vGPU software has eight different security holes. Now, the virtualized GPU allows computing acceleration tailored for resource-intensive workflows like graphics-rich virtualized stations, workstations, data science, and artificial intelligence. Now, the first four bugs are high-severity input validation bugs that can lead to information disclosure, data tampering, or DDoS. Now, if you ask me, it sounds that like NVIDIA might need to maybe pivot on their security practices of their software and their drivers and look for better ways to catch vulnerabilities before they release them.
Okay, so this item might sound a little inside baseball, but it has implications for just about every enterprise because the ATT&CK, that's pronounced attack framework from nonprofit corporation MITRE, is so widely used across the industry. MITRE has released the latest version of its attack framework, adding support for threat information affecting Apple's Mac OS and various flavors of Linux, while also allowing more data sources and relationships. The release is one of two updates to the popular framework due out this year, with another planned for October. The two most important changes are better support for both the macOS and Linux platforms and the adoption of more flexible ways of specifying the necessary data to describe each threat technique. The release includes 16 new groups, 67 new pieces of software, and updates to 36 other groups and 51 software entries, according to MITRE. The goal, they say, is to make the framework more functional based on specific feedback from the community of users, says Adam Pennington, attack lead at MITRE. In a blog published last Thursday, the research organization stated that the update is designed to better connect offensive techniques with potential defensive actions. The company continues to make modifications based on feedback. For example, in October, the company will release more support for mobile threats and defenses, as well as update the approach to threats that affect industrial control systems. In the future, ATT&CK will also incorporate container technologies. MITRE has already released a draft ATT&CK for containers matrix and will be incorporating feedback for a future release.
Over the last few years, researchers have found a shocking number of vulnerabilities in seemingly basic code that underpins how devices communicate with the internet. Now, a new set of nine such vulnerabilities are exposing an estimated 100 million devices worldwide, including an array of Internet of Things products and IT management servers. The larger question researchers are scrambling to answer, though, is how to spur substantive changes and implement effective defenses as more and more of these types of vulnerabilities pile up. Dubbed name Wreck, the newly disclosed flaws are in four ubiquitous TCP/IP stacks, code that integrates network communications protocols to establish connections between devices and the internet. The vulnerabilities present in operating systems like the open source project FreeBSD, as well as NucleusNet from the industrial control firm Siemens, all relate to how these stacks implement the quote domain name system internet phone book. They all would allow an attacker to either crash a device and take it offline or gain control of it remotely. Both of these attacks could potentially wreak havoc in a network, especially in critical infrastructure, healthcare, or manufacturing settings where infiltrating a connected device or IT server can disrupt the whole system or serve as a valuable jumping-off point for burrowing deeper into a victim's network. Oh. This brings back something the Twiat gang has brought up in the past. Can you trust the modules you're including in your product? What does your vetting process look like, and just how many of your modules call other modules? And do you know which ones are actually being called? The reality is that all too many IoT vendors are simply repackaging open source projects without following good software hygiene. One would hope that if you're not going to spend the effort to develop your own code from scratch, that maybe you might want to spend a bit of time to spend vetting that code that you're planning on using.
Now, we've talked plenty about SolarWinds and how it brought to light the need for more security over supply chains. They're vulnerable. Well, we didn't necessarily need another example why we need to pay more attention, but Click Studios has one for us anyways. As many as 29,000 users of the Password State Password Manager downloaded a malicious update that extracted data from the app and sent it to the attacker-controlled server, the app maker told customers. Now, in an email, Password State creator Click Studios told customers that a bad actor's compromised its upgrade mechanism and used it to install a malicious file on users' computers. Now, the file named Moserware, secretsplitter.dll, contained a legitimate copy of an app called Secret Splitter, along with malicious code named Loader, according to the brief write-up from the security firm CSIS Group. The Loader code attempts to retrieve a file archive called upgrade service upgrade.zip, so it can retrieve an encrypted second stage payload. Now, once decrypted, the code is executed directly in memory. And the email from the Click Studio said that the code, quote, extracts information about the computer system, its selected password state data, which is then posted to a bad actor's CDN network. Now, let's talk about password managers for a second. Now, security practitioners regularly recommend password managers because they make it easy for people to store long, complex passwords that are unique to hundreds or even thousands of accounts. Without use of password managers, many people resort to weak passwords that are reused for multiple accounts. Now, the password state breach underscores the risk posed by password managers because they represent a single point of failure that can compromise large numbers of online assets. Now, the stakes are definitely high, or maybe even significantly lower, when two-factor authentication is available and enabled because of extracted passwords alone aren't enough to gain access. Now, luckily, we have an identity expert as a guest today to give us a little bit more perspective here. What can you do to protect yourself, though? Well, if you use Password State, you should reset all your passwords, especially those that access hardware and infrastructure. Also, remember, push your organizations to focus more time on their supply chains.
SpaceX, the other day, was granted permission to use a lower orbit for Starlink satellites, as regulators agreed with SpaceX that the changes will improve broadband speed and latency while making it easier to minimize orbital debris. In granting SpaceX's request, the Federal Communications Commission dismissed opposition from Viasat, Hughes, Dish Network, OneWeb, the Amazon subsidiary known as Kuiper, and other satellite companies that claimed the change would cause too much interference with other systems. Back in 2018, SpaceX received FCC approval to launch 4,425 broadband satellites at orbits of 1,110 kilometers to 1,325 kilometers. An FCC order in 2019 gave SpaceX permission to use a lower altitude for over 1,500 of those satellites. Today's FCC order granted SpaceX's additional license change request, lowering the altitude for 2,814 16 of the satellites, letting them orbit in the 540 to 570 kilometer range. That FCC order will also let SpaceX use a lower elevation angle for antennas on user terminals and gateway Earth stations. Quote, based on the review, we agree with SpaceX that the modification will improve the experience for users of SpaceX service, including the off underserved polar regions, according to the FCC. They conclude that the lower elevation angle of its Earth station antennas and lower altitude of its satellites enable a better user experience by improving speeds and latency. The FCC order also said, quote, a number of satellites being deployed pursuant to this modification are satellites orbiting at higher inclinations, which are uniquely able to provide improved service to higher latitude regions. As for the license change's impact on orbital debris, the FCC said deployment to a lower altitude guarantees removal of satellites from orbit within a relatively short period of time and consequently has beneficial effects with respect to orbital debris mitigation. Now, what's puzzling is why the FCC isn't listening harder to the others in the industry like Hughes and ViaSat, who have both said that they would also love to operate at lower altitudes to improve their services. However, the FCC states seems to indicate that this lower altitude for SpaceX doesn't interfere with existing spaceborne systems, and I'm going to hold my breath because I'm not sure about that.
Well, take a bow, all ye in IT and InfoSec, for pulling off the biggest, baddest save the world action in the heat of a pandemic. Because of you, businesses kept running even when there wasn't anyone in the building to keep the lights on and the machines patched. Unfortunately, in the chaos, a lot of best practices likely fell through the cracks. Many new issues are arising from those cracks now to threaten companies, and really, how could they not? Those empty buildings remain abandoned a year and a half later, and no telling what has occurred in all this time, or what new and awful challenges are brewing in there still. Companies that rely on air gaps to protect sensitive networks or machinery should be particularly concerned because the surest way to jump the air gap is with physical access. That's according to Michael Behar, partner and co-lead of global security and data privacy at global law firm Evershed Sutherland. An abandoned building could present almost infinite opportunities for an inside threat. Just find an unoccupied desk with an open internet Ethernet port, and you can easily become the initial entry port for a company network. That's according to Chris Haas, Director of Information Security and Research at Automox, an endpoint management company. Attackers with access to workspaces and devices could plant some nasty surprises that won't kick in until much later. So the challenge now is to mitigate problems as the tide of workers flows back in the opposite direction. In many ways, this might actually be trickier to pull off, say the experts. For example, even a mature cybersecurity operation could struggle with devices left online and untouched for long periods of time. And don't forget the stockpile of old devices previously scheduled for wipes and disposal. Add to that an incoming tsunami of devices that may be loaded with security threats, some that need to be disposed of and some that will be connected directly to the office network. Buildings that were not properly secured and monitored over this past year present a ton of new opportunities, and as you know, attacker is just another word for sneaky pants opportunist in the security world.
Google's been one of the first big companies to move its workforce out of the office in the early days of the pandemic, but now it's calling employees back. Some of them say they don't intend to return. Now, while tech firms like Microsoft and Twitter have announced that they will allow employees to work from home permanently, Google has resisted going fully remote. Now, employees say there's an increasing sense of frustration among the faction of the workforce. And many employees have taken to social media to proclaim that they and their cohorts might have to quit if they're forced to go back. Now, some of which are actually made public that they have permanent moves during that pandemic. Now, one employee said, quote, a lot of my colleagues have moved away with no real intention to come back. Now, one of those employees actually said, especially in the 30s and 40 age range or bracket, I would say that's predominantly where it is. Now, several leaders also moved back to the Bay out of the Bay Area during the pandemic, and they're actually not going to return either if required. Now, Google has told employees they are expected to be back in the office by September 2021. Still, last December, the company said it would pilot a new flexible arrangement where employees are expected to work from the office 3 days a week. Since then, Google has offered few specifics of the new arrangement, and employees are pressing leaders to actually answer those things. Now, Google has never said it would offer fully remote work for anyone who wants it, but as the deadline return to office has been pushed back, some employees have relocated anyways. Now, many employees want to return to the office. In fact, an internal survey conducted last year, 62% of Googlers said they wanted to return to the office, although just 8% said they wanted to do that full time. That's pretty low. Now, with its open office culture filled with perks like snacks, meals, and nap pods, Google has plenty of reasons to cling to an in-person work. Now, one employee pointed out that splitting teams between the office and remote work could create awkward dynamics. Now, Google has continued to invest in physical workplaces during the pandemic, expanding its Mountain View, California headquarters with plans for a new campus in San Jose. Like all large organizations, Google is most likely doing its research and doing some studies around this area. Now, in my opinion, they will find hybrid workplace to be a welcoming and productive environment, especially in this day and age. Now, they will also find that a diverse workplace, including remote and on-site workers, will be the future of business. Let's hope they figure it out in time. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the bites. But we have to thank a really great sponsor before we get to the bites, and that is Veeam. Now, we talk a lot about backup and recovery on Twyatt, and it can save your organization from disaster and from the most recent attack vectors out there. Now, Veeam is the leader in backup solutions that deliver cloud data management through a single platform. That's right. Modernize backup, accelerate hybrid cloud, and secure your data with Veeam solutions. They are simple to install, run, and are flexible enough to fit in any environment and are always reliable. Now, the Veeam Backup and Replication V11 eliminates data loss and ransomware while helping you save 20 times on your long-term archive retention costs. The 4-in-1 solution combines backup, replication, storage, snapshots, and now continuous data protection under a single platform, delivering faster and more flexible data protection as well as recovery and retention options. Now, VLM unlocks unprecedented resiliency for any size business, offering over 200 new features and enhancements. Now, here are some of the top ones. They offer continuous data protection, solving the problem of meeting both internal and external SLAs is often expensive for IT leaders. Now, the cost of technology and its complexity often requires personal training and time to build proficiency. Now, Veeam helps eliminate downtime and minimizes data loss for your tier one VMware workloads. With its built-in CDP, you'll achieve immediate recoveries to the latest state or desired point in time. Also, data stays safe. Ransomware stays out. Now, Veeam V11 helps you secure and recover your backup data with confidence for its entire lifecycle. Now, 95% of Veeam customers experience little to no financial impact at all due to ransomware attacks. Stop ransomware in its tracks. Ensure backup compliance and safeguard your recoverability with native immutability for your backups. Plus, 20 times less cost for long-term retention with immutability. A large portion requires management across performance, capacity, and archive storage. Veeam offers intelligent data lifecycle management for backup copies and reduce the cost of long-term data archival and retention and achieve end-to-end backup lifecycle management with Veeam capacity and archive tiers. Also, you'll have Veeam-powered BAS and DRAS. 91% of IT organizations have increased their reliance on cloud services post-pandemic. Now, Veeam partners with a global network of cloud and managed service providers in 180-plus countries to architect, deliver, and optimize BAS and DRAS powered by their cloud-ready data protection capabilities. Plus, your cloud backup is here with Azure Backup and Recovery. Now, Azure Native Backup and Recovery are now built in to the very same platform you use for your virtual and physical data protection in V11. By unifying backup, recovery, and management of all data in common control plane, Veeam Backup and Replication eliminates these complexities and breaks down the barriers to rapid cloud adoption. With over 400,000 customers worldwide, including Puma, Welch's, and Deloitte, Veeam was named a leader in the 2020 Gartner Magic Quadrant for the fourth time for providing backup that goes beyond legacy platforms to provide reliable backup, monitoring, analytics, automation, and orchestration. Eliminate data loss and ransomware with Veeam Backup and Replication V11 with a free unlimited 30-day trial. Just go to vee.am/twit and find out why Veeam is simple, flexible, and reliable. That's vee.am/twit. And we thank Veeam for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the bites. We have some pretty good ones this week. Now, with remote work, the perimeter of the network has definitely changed. Now, we've talked about this many times on the show. IT organizations continue to have challenges here. In fact, you know, some actually try to secure devices. So how do you secure devices when working off home networks or sometimes random insecure networks like hotels and other places? Well, it's a definitely a challenge. Well, while we are close to seeing the light at the end of the COVID tunnel here, there's no sign that the work from home trend is really created to be coming to an end here. Now, even before the pandemic, the number of employees who work remotely has been rising continuously. 36.2 million Americans, or 22% of the workforce, will be working remotely by 2025. Now, today's hybrid work from home scenario demands that chief information security officers look at home Wi-Fi access and IT infrastructure as part of the entire enterprise security ecosystem. Now, according to an IBM study, human error is the cause of 95% of cybersecurity breaches. That's not surprising. This is a staggering statistic, indicates that people don't know what to do or to look for to protect their information. Now, a significant security risk associated with remote work is war driving, which, in fact, you probably heard of that before, where, in fact, somebody will steal Wi-Fi credentials from unsecured networks while driving past people's homes and offices. And once the hacker steals the Wi-Fi password, they move on to spoofing the network's address resolution protocol. Next, the network's traffic is sent to the hacker, and that person is fully equipped to actually access corporate data and wreak havoc on the enterprise network. Now, a typical home office router is set up with WPA2 PSK, which stands for Wi-Fi Protected Access to Pre-Shared Key. Now, a network protected with a single password shared between all user devices. Unfortunately, that's by far the most common authentication mechanism used by homes, which puts employees at risk for over-the-air credential theft. So how should employees be securing their Wi-Fi network? That's a good question, right? Now, the first thing is, obviously, to get them educated. You need to make sure that the better the employees understand how to secure the networks, the lower the risk for the entire corporate net. And the next thing is to secure the home Wi-Fi along with enterprise-grade networks. Now, WPA2 enterprise networks use a RADIUS server with an extensible authentication protocol, EAP, that ensures information is sent to the RADIUS and it's protected. Now, employees work remotely and access sensitive resources. You want to guarantee they have the best possible protection for themselves as well. Well, we're in luck because we have two very good security experts here as hosts on our show. Hubert, I want to start with you first. As a person who's been trying to secure his home network for quite a while, because I access corporate as well, what else should be people doing here? What should they just be securing things like changing their Wi-Fi protocol? I don't think that's it, right?
Well, the problem with a lot of home Wi-Fi is it's open. You set it up so that you can browse for your network attached storage. You can browse for your printer. You can browse for your TV. And that's just asking for all kinds of problems. It's a feature that can be turned on or off. Inter Wi-Fi client communications is a configurable item in most enterprise or even some consumer devices. If you are worried, some of the simpler things that I've done for some friends in the past is my doctor friend. I said, okay, you're going to have to bite the bullet. Why don't you go wired Ethernet? So we don't have to worry. We'll put your kids and your wife and your printers and so forth on the wireless side so that we at least separate the two risk vectors, shall we say. I also go and say, just run the VPN. You know, I know you're on behind an enterprise-grade firewall. Run a VPN anyway. It's worth it. Now, so anyway, separating it out is getting easier. I just set up the new Eero 6, E-E-R-O, and it has the capability of having a guest Wi-Fi channel and a regular one. You could have one for kids and so forth. But they've kind of crippled it. If you're running an enterprise-grade firewall, you actually have to turn off almost all the security functions on the Eero, which is kind of sad. I've been told something similar for the Google and something similar for the Netgear or Orbeez. Mesh has been great, especially the new triple radio devices where it uses a 6 gigahertz band to go sideways within your home, and that allows you to have 2.4 and 5.8. It's nice. But a lot of the consumer Wi-Fi are still doing compromises. So I'm using a SonicWall. Some people like it, some people don't. Juniper has some very good ones. There's some very good enterprise-grade firewalls that do not cost a lot of money anymore. And what's nice is you can implement different VLANs, you know, virtual local area networks, so that you can separate out the traffic. So you can have your printers, say, on one, your printers in IoT, maybe on one, the kids on another, your work area on another, maybe your wife's work area on yet another. It's getting easier to do. They're just calling them different Wi-Fi networks, and might be something you might want to think about. Because I'll tell you, as far as things like war driving, I've done lots of it. In fact, I've sat in the middle of downtown financial district in several cities that I had friends in, and I sat there with a directional antenna and started scanning and looking for things. I was shocked. I shouldn't be shocked. I was surprised at how many open systems I found. I actually found someone that brought in a home Wi-Fi router, stuck it under their desk on a corporate banking network, and I was able to actually see financial transactions going back and forth. Audit your networks. Audit your home networks. Change your passwords on a regular basis. For the Wi-Fi vendors out there, make it easier to change the passwords. Come on. You know, having to dig through 6 different menus on my printer to be able to change the password means you're never going to change the password. So anyway, yeah, Lou, you're having fun with this, aren't you?
I am. I'm taking notes. I actually took notes. I'm like, I'm going to try all these things. I'm going to have to cover up these things. I'm going to catch up with you later on these things. I do want to throw this to Curtis too, because obviously enterprise, you brought some a good point around VPN, because you know you can't just go buy an off-the-shelf VPN. I mean, that's just not going to work. Can you really trust those when you're talking about connecting to enterprise resources? Curtis, what should enterprises be doing here? Should they be supplying the VPN here as well?
Well, I think that many companies should be providing a VPN, but let's be honest that a VPN can be a two-edged sword here, because what if your employee manages to get malware, manages to do things that are unsafe on their home work network, and then you allow them to VPN into the enterprise network? All of a sudden, the attacker has an encrypted highway into your enterprise resources. So I think that what the enterprise can do that has the greatest effect is to come in and provide lists of best practices to their employees for their home networks. All the sorts of things that Brian was talking about, those should be in a document that is given to employees who are working from home. Tell them you should be doing this, you should be doing that. If you are in a location where you know that most of your employees are using a particular, let's say, cable internet provider, go ahead and give them specific instructions on how to set up the most secure configurations on their home networks. Most of the time, employees want to do the right things. They just don't know how. And so to the extent that the enterprise can help them with that information, can help educate them, then they're doing something that's good for the employee and absolutely fabulous for the enterprise.
Right, right. Yes, it makes me laugh because I'm thinking of Padre Chebert and Curtis sitting in a van with a Pringles can on the top, war driving. I don't know why I get that vision in my head. This is an interesting one. I think hopefully in the future we have easier ways for people to set up home networks again, because Chebert went through a lot, Curtis went through a lot here. It's not an easy thing to do. To make sure that enterprise is guaranteeing its employees are on secure Wi-Fi networks. It's hard to even get a good connection from employees on the edge of the network, let alone a secure Wi-Fi. So hopefully there's some new technology that will help with this even so. But I do want to go to the next bite, because the next bite's pretty interesting here. We talk a lot about this all the time around ransomware and just how crafty the ransomware operators are getting. They're using, social networking, social engineering, social networks, exploitation to make sure they're getting paid. What's going on here, Curtis?
Well, what we have here is a case of the criminals improving their attacks to match the improved defense of the good guys. Early in the ransomware rise, what we saw was a lot of people coming in and improving their backup and recovery response. And that is very helpful when you talk about things like ransomware, because let's face it, if your disk is encrypted, it's much less dangerous to your organization if you have solid backup to go with it. Knowing this, the criminals have gone in, and what they've begun doing is exfiltrating data, that is, stealing data before they encrypt it. And that way, they can tell the victim that if they don't want to pay up, even if they've already figured out how to unencrypt the data, but if they don't want to pay up, then sensitive data, either from the organization in terms of their critical data structure or their critical information for the enterprise, or their customers or employees, personally identifiable information, will be released on the dark web. So this combination of extortion and ransomware is becoming much more common and, frankly, much more effective. Now, in one of the most recent examples, we've seen a Metropolitan Police Department from Washington, D.C., have their input or their data stolen and an attacker threatening to release it. This is especially sensitive because in many locations, members of law enforcement have special protections against having their personally identifiable information released to the public. Just as an example, where we live, the financial or the real estate records of law enforcement tend not to be released the way they are for most individuals under public records. So this really is the sort of thing that makes it extra important to stop ransomware at the source rather than responding to it and depending upon your remediation. Now, Lou, I want to look at you first, because this is the sort of thing that has huge enterprise implications. How realistic do you think it is to be able to depend on your training and education of users to stop ransomware attacks when you can't depend on your backup and recovery?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. Like, obviously, if you can't depend on backup and recovery, you're going to have to depend on other layers within the system. Obviously, you have to make sure that you're depending on, your users who are usually more open to these attacks. You have to be, you have to be open to making sure that, you know, you have your blue team and your red team, that they're doing their work on your network to make sure that there's not vulnerabilities. You're going to have to, you have to depend on the software that you're using is secure. There's a lot of different layers within the system. If you, especially if you can't depend on your backup and recovery. So I think, you know, these are the types of things that organizations should be thinking through, especially since the bad guys are getting craftier.
Absolutely. Now, Brian, I want to turn to you. I was speaking with Lou about training and education, but from what you've seen out in the industry, are there any technological solutions that can, well, get us past having to rely on these very fallible human beings?
Yeah, I wish there were. It's really comes down to follow the money. I've worked with more than my fair share of law enforcement organizations, and their job is putting bad guys away. Their job isn't running an IT department. So IT departments at almost every police department I've ever worked with has always had the short end of the stick on budgets. They don't have the cool tools. They don't have a way of auditing more often. And trust me, it's not that sexy. So the Justice Department, I think, needs to have their hand out to local law enforcement. I think there needs to be more of a two-way street going here. We need to have more of a two-way street of training and cross-training and providing tools. There's some really good open source tools that if we could get vetted by a trusted organization, that those could go a long way to helping us prevent this. Creating training courses for specifically for law enforcement on best practices. So there's some cool things you can do, small things. Even some consumer grade storage arrays will encrypt before the data goes at rest. That can go a long way. There's a lot of systems where it's relatively easy now to start shutting off Ethernet ports that aren't in use. Make it easy. Make it easier to provision, a new officer's desk. And part of that should be turning on the Ethernet port, not, just find whatever Ethernet port you want. There's a lot of small things that add up to better data hygiene, better security hygiene that we need to learn. And sadly, a lot of it's been as the new kids come in, but it doesn't need to be. The old timers in the industry need to share. The FBI has InfraGuard. We need to have something for Leos. We've got Leo Laporte. Maybe we can figure out something under the Twit TV auspices to do Leo IT training. What do you guys think?
Love it.
Sounds like it could be an interesting thing. Well, Lou, this is one of those things, we're going to be talking about for a long time, because I don't see either ransomware or employees going away anytime soon. But until we have a better response, we'll keep talking about it, doing what we can here on TWiET. And with that, we'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Curtis. Well, when we come back, we're going to guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Ride, my favorite part of the show. But before we get to that, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that is Bitwarden. Now, what is the easiest way for businesses and individuals to store, share, and sync sensitive data? That's right, Bitwarden. Now, Bitwarden is the only open source cross-platform password manager that can be used at home, on the go, or at work. Now, one of the biggest challenges for businesses is to empower employees to follow password management best practices. By giving your employees Bitwarden, they can securely store credentials spanning across personal and business worlds. Now, every BitWarrant account begins with the creation of a personal vault, which allows the users to store their own personal credentials. Use BitWarden for business as well. When an individual joins a team or a company, they can be assigned to the organizational vault for access to shared credentials. Quicker access means quicker productivity. That's right. Now, also, BitWarden is fully customizable. You can turn on or off features using enterprise policies to adapt to your business needs. Now, you can generate unique and secure passwords for every site your employees access and ensure password is not used more than once. Now, you also minimize the risk of using weak and vulnerable passwords as well. Now, customize and set password requirements and administrative policies that will actually empower employees to practice good password hygiene. Now, you'll get enterprise-grade security, and Bitwarden conducts regular third-party security audits and is compliant with Privacy Shield, HIPAA, GDPR, CCPA, SOC 2, and SOC 3 security standards. Now, unite your existing systems with Bitwarden using SSO authentication, directory services, or really powerful APIs. Love those. Now, get up and running fast using the Bitwarden Cloud or gain complete control with the option to self-host. You'll be able to monitor, manage security vulnerabilities using the Bitwarden Vault and Health Reports with actionable insights to exposed, reused, weak, or potentially compromised passwords, as well as identify any items in your vault with inactive 2FA. Now, mitigate the likelihood of successful phishing attacks by storing passwords and other sensitive information with an end-to-end encrypted vault. Bitwarden is open source password manager trusted by millions of individuals, teams, and organizations worldwide for secure password storage and sharing. Get the password manager that offers a robust and cost-effective solution that can drastically increase your chances of staying safe online. Get started with a free trial of a Teams or Enterprise plan at bitwarden.com/twit or try for free across devices as an individual user. That's bitwarden.com/twit. And we thank Bitwarden for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show where we actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. And today we have Tom Dramola. He's the co-founder and CEO of Beyond Identity. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks, Lou. Glad to be here.
Now, it's a special treat to have you on, Tom, because I know I've followed your career for a long time. But before we get to all that, I want to take the audience on just a short journey. We like to do origin stories here on the show, just a short journey through tech and what actually brought you to Beyond Identity.
Yeah, my partner Jim Clark and I, we've been together 35 years, if you can believe that. We're working on an idea about some technology for smart homes, smart buildings, and the notion of needing a password to be able to turn on your lights or turn off your motion sensors sort of flew in the face of usability. And so we kind of created this idea around going passwordless for all these capabilities, all the way down to end devices. And out of that came an even bigger idea of creating Beyond Identity and using that to really solve the passwordless problem. That's passwords are obviously 90% of the attack surface of all the cybersecurity issues that are going on in the world today. And we've set out to try and fundamentally architect our way out of that rather than keep putting Band-Aids on top of it, which is what the security industry has done for 20 years now.
Right. I like that, architecting your way out of it. Now, lots of organizations are seeing the writing on the wall when it comes to passwords. Now, interesting enough, Beyond Identity is taking a pretty interesting approach with some familiar tech from back in the day, from your Netscape days, right? What's the Beyond Identity strategy and the tech behind it?
That's right. So back at Netscape, Taher Al-Ghamal and the gang, they created a really cool way for web servers to communicate passwordlessly by using what was called then SSL, now it's called TLS, as the protocol combined with X509 certificates. That's still what's used today, 25 years later, moves trillions of dollars of money around every day. If you buy something on Amazon and it needs to go to the Visa site, it's all handled with that technology. So our insight was the world is now ready for us to take and extend that technology down to end users so that you can run it on your phone, on your laptop, on your desktop, on your tablet. And that's really the insight that allowed us to extend, if you will, this already proven scalable secure technology down to you and make you a full peer of the network.
So this is interesting because a lot of time, obviously TLS, SSL, sometimes there's some challenges with it because you have to deal with certificate authorities and sometimes self-hosting, being a self-signing certificate authority is sometimes challenging. How are you overcoming some of those challenges?
Yeah, that's the thing that scares everybody. The minute they hear PKI and certificates, they think of, oh my God, I have to run a certificate manager. And nobody wants to do that. It's just been a nightmare for them. So we took all of that out of the system. They don't know they're even using certificates. There's no certificate manager. There's none of that technology. The user doesn't know it. The company deploying it doesn't know anything about it. It all just runs in our authentication system. So we're using it as an underlying technology, but we're not using it in any way, shape, or form exposed to a user or an application.
Interesting. So when organizations are looking to set up, like nowadays they're already developing, they already have like identity databases of identities today. How are organizations actually migrating to this technology? Do they have to run through a migration process? Do they have to go set up a certificate for each person? How's this all work?
The best part, thanks for asking that, Lou, is that if you're running an SSO today, if you have Okta, Ping, ForgeRock, Azure AD, this is a 10-minute setup. You flip a config switch in your SSO, and we're up and running. We're the delegate IDP, as they call it. We do all this without you doing anything else. There's no code changes. There's no changes to your browsers. There's no applications interface changes. There's nothing. We've gotten entire companies, we turned all of Snowflake on. They have 4,000 users up and running on the system. They did it while they were going through an IPO process, and they did it for the whole company all in a week. So it's pretty easy technology to deploy.
That's impressive because I know, now with remote work on the high, a lot of organizations are moving to techniques that try to rid themselves of the nasty password. And we're seeing things like authenticators and, enabling multi-factor. And so people are, entering their password less, and they're using other techniques to kind of get away from it. How does this kind of slot in? How does this type of technology slot into all of that?
Right. So we're the next step forward, which is important. When you think about passwordless, ask yourself, are they not using the password, or are they actually removing the password from the directory or the database? Because MFA, typically legacy MFA, still leaves the password there. They're just trying to have the user not use it. But that leaves you open to ransomware attacks. So 70% of ransomware attacks are RDP-based, using stolen credentials, using the password. SolarWinds was using stolen credentials, whether it's with social engineering, whether it's with phishing, whether it's buying them off the dark web. They're using that credential to log in the back door and get through it, even if the user themselves aren't using the password anymore. So unless you have an architecture that truly allows you to remove the password from the system and go completely passwordless, then you're not really, providing the security to the system. All you are is providing a little bit easier user experience, but you're not increasing the security level of your corporation.
Right. Like you said, a lot of organizations like to remove that impedance when it comes to entering passwords or remembering passwords, that kind of thing. What's the experience here? So I'm a user, I'm connecting to the network, I need to identify and provide my claims. What's the process that you have to go through when it comes to Beyond Identity?
So you use the standard biometric of whatever device you're on. If you're on your phone, your face, or your finger, same thing on your laptop. And that authenticates you and binds your identity to the device. Once your identity, and this is the real key to the zero trust architecture, is once your identity and the device information are bound together, you pass that information with all transactions through any part of the network. So it goes to the SSO, it goes to the federated network system, and it's used in that binding throughout all of the different authentications that are going to happen. So it really, the identity has become the perimeter of the system. That's the new zero trust boundary, instead of it being in the company on an on-premise or network or WAN based system. So for the user, all they do is they authenticate with their biometric, and once they're on the system, they click the application and they're in. You know, there's no reason why you have to remember a password or go through another user ID. There's already a private key that is saved in the TPM, what's called the hardware security module, the HSM, in your system that nobody can read. The user doesn't read it. We don't read it. It never leaves the device. So that private key on that device is bound to you as your identity via that biometric challenge. And from then on, that becomes your password.
Interesting. Now, from an IT perspective, how are organizations managing this? Are they able to support this type of scenario on-prem as well as online in the cloud?
We're fully cloud native. We're formed that way. So our system all runs in the cloud. We can support hybrid environments and allow people to run this to their on-prem applications as well. But the majority of our users right now are interested in migrating their apps to the cloud and running it that way. And they're all running their SSOs in the cloud now. But we can do it hybrid if that's what they want.
Got it. Now, I noticed you said, obviously, the technology, the way you explained it, means that even if you add things in there like VPN or other kind of transport mechanisms, that shouldn't interfere with this whole identity process, correct?
Yeah, correct. It doesn't interfere with anything. It really, you know, there's other purposes for VPN, but VPN is not a great solution for how you migrate, you know, 50,000 of your workers into a remote environment. You know, it's very complicated, and remembering passwords and rotating them and having to go through those issues isn't something people in the C-suite typically like. So our system creates the ability to come in remotely, to come in without a password or having to remember that by having bound to your device. And we don't have any local pops or tromboning or hairpinning of traffic like the VPNs do. We just go straight to the cloud.
Right. Now, beyond identity, you guys are doing, obviously, you're doing the passwordless model, but you're doing other things too. You're kind of moving beyond the passwordless model as well and doing some other authentication solutions too. Is that right?
Exactly. Yes. So every time that identity and device are bound, for every transaction, we pass over 100 pieces of data off of your laptop or your phone to the risk analysis engine. So we have the geolocation, the IP address, your name, the device name, if your disk is encrypted, if your firewall's turned on, are you running an MDM? We have all the different information coming off that device is passed into a risk policy engine. And the IT department of the company can simply very easily and visually set a set of Booleans that say, hey, if let's say Lou wants to wire money in the banking app. Well, Lou is right now in Seattle, but we know that he lives in Dallas. So maybe we should check and make sure that's really Lou on their computer right now. Let's do what we call a step-up authentication. Show us your face. Let's do a test and make sure that that's really you. Maybe you're traveling. Maybe it's okay, but maybe it's not. So our basis is what we call continuous authentication, kind of like against the Carta standard that's being developed there of doing risk policy analysis so that identity bound with the device is carried through those transactions and allows the company the ability to keep on monitoring it. And that's what's able to stop things like the SolarWinds attack that came in. We can do this for generalized key management. We can do it for checking in source code so that in the SolarWinds case, somebody spoofed another employee's identity to check in that code so they couldn't track it back to an unknown identity. In our case, we create a situation where they can't do that, where they have that identity in the device bound, and we know exactly who checked that source code in, and you can do identity and proof testing against it. So absolutely, we're using the passwordless technology as the basis. That's the entry point. But the real key is to go to true continuous authentication.
We have a lot more to talk about with Tom, but before we do have, I think, another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Audible. Now, have you ever wanted to read a memoir and just didn't have the time? Or maybe you found a little title or that you couldn't put down, but you also needed to maybe fold the laundry? Now you can do both because Audible makes it possible. Now, when you're driving, cooking, cleaning, or cleaning your house, or just relaxing, you can listen to amazing audio files with Audible. And Audible is the leading provider of spoken word entertainment all in one place. Now, at Audible, you can find the largest selection of audiobooks ranging from bestsellers and new releases to celebrity memoirs, languages, business, motivation, and more. Get original entertainment from top celebrity creators and thousands of popular and binge-worthy podcasts. They are now offering their newest plan, Audible Plus. Now, Audible Plus gives you full access to their popular Plus catalog. Now, Audible Plus is all about giving members a chance to listen to and discover new favorites and explore different formats like the exclusive Words Plus Music series or a podcast you never considered before, even theatrical performances. You can listen all you want to thousands and thousands of popular audiobooks, original entertainment, and podcasts, including ad-free versions of your favorite shows and exclusive series. They're all available to download or stream, so you can listen anywhere, anytime, on any device, and you'll never lose your spot. To use Audible membership, you will need to download the Audible app, and the Audible app is free and can be installed on all smartphones and tablets. Listening to Audible will make you feel inspired, connected. It's available on all-in-one app. Audible Plus is your playlist for life. What are you waiting for? Delve into your next title on Audible with Audible Plus. New members can try Audible Plus for 30 days. Download the Audible app and get started with a free trial at audible.com/Twyatt or text Twyatt to 500-500. That's AUDIBLE.com/Twyatt or text Twyatt to 500-500 to start your free trial today. And we thank Audible for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Tom Dremerlek. He's co-founder and CEO of Beyond Identity. We have a lot to talk about here. I do want to bring my co-host back in. Let's start with you, Chibert.
Well, I've kind of old school. I did a lot of work for the State Department doing PKI facilities. And one of the Achilles heels when you start talking about certificates is clocks. I had users doing a lot of VSAT work. I had users doing a lot of remote work. And when the clocks got out of sync, a lot of these kinds of SSOs and so forth, authentication systems tend to break. How do you guys deal with that kind of issue when you have very remote users?
Very remote users, meaning latency is what you're concerned
about? Latency and jitter, like a huge VSAT connection or LTE.
Right. Well, LTE isn't a problem. We're deployed. You know, we can easily deploy through the cloud as a cloud native app on a worldwide basis. We're deployed with AWS. We can deploy with the Google Cloud and put it in geolocations and have our DNS, of course, at the edges. So there's very little latency issue for any land-based system, wireless or wired form of system. We haven't tried something through VSAT. Of course, we're configurable as far as how long you want the timeouts to be. The longer you make a timeout in any security system, the longer, obviously, people have the opportunity to try and steal that signal, if you will. But, you know, in a VSAT sense, people are already dealing with that in government security programs. So I would guess that we would piggyback on whatever those accounts were doing if we were to get into that kind of an application. But to date, we have customers all over the world, in China and India and Russia, as well as obviously all across the United States and Europe. So we don't have a particular latency issue with that.
Sounds great. Hey, what about special, you know, DevOps programs within a corporation? Do you guys have some sort of toolkit that makes it easier for the DevOps team to integrate your authentication system into it?
Yeah, big time. We've got a great fellow, Bob Burke, down in who built our Dallas team. That's where we're building out our DevOps organization, which is a world-class group. They're going to be responsible for it on a global basis. We do you know, continuous release, and obviously being in the security business, not only we're in between you and your ability to log into your system. So we're very conscious of the fact that if our system were to go down or be penetrated, it's going to prevent your employees from being able to get into that environment. And so as a part of that particular part of the ecosystem, we're super involved with that. We work very closely with Amazon, with AWS team, as well as in integrating our tools and making sure that it's fully secure and full stack seamless.
Tom, I did have a question. You talked a little bit about the integration with cloud services and with DevOps perspective. Now, a lot of cloud services, like for instance, Azure has a very deep integration with Azure AD. How does these kind of solutions integrate with like Azure AD and other kind of identity management and authentication management services?
Yes, thanks. We're fully integrated with Azure AD environment. In fact, we implemented what's known as desktop login, which is where you can open your computer and without doing anything at all, have it automatically joined to the Azure network, and it'll federate into the domain and join your domain and join the SSO as well. So we have a big team within the company that's very focused on the Microsoft environment. We want to be a full partner with everything that they are doing. We consider Azure AD, Okta, Ping, ForgeRock, all our biggest partners are all well established as providing SSO functionality. And so we sort of take it the last mile, if you will, and turn that into a passwordless and risk policy based system.
Now, are you guys also integrated into the like Windows Hello technology as well?
Yes, in that Windows Hello is a primary, for Windows Hello for Business, I should say, is the primary biometric interface that Microsoft uses for PIN and biometrics into the system. So we integrate with that.
Fantastic. So another question really quick is, now we talked a little bit about, DevOps, but from a developer perspective, I'm a developer, I'm an engineer, we build a lot of software, and sometimes we build it where you have to technically authenticate with another service that might not be like an on-domain type service. Is this type technology available to, like, let's say if I wanted to build a Windows or a Mac application and I needed to integrate authentication into it, is it possible to use a similar technology just in my app, even though my operating system might be logged into a domain, another domain kind of thing?
Thanks, Lou. Great question. Yes, we do provide a full SDK for developers. So you can actually embed our authenticator. It has a REST API, and you can embed it within your application. And we have a full interface, an API interface on the server side that allows you to have the complete functionality of all of the authentication, risk policy, data lake, audit and compliance, all those capabilities, and build it directly into your app. Versus going through the back end of an SSO, you can do it with OIDC, with OAuth, with SAML, or directly in your app.
One of the things that I'm curious about, we have been hearing about hardware tokens and various tokens being used for authentication for years. And there has always been a reluctance on the part of most organizations to employ them for various reasons. From cost to user training to just, losing the darn things. What about your system and the time that we're in now makes this a really viable alternative now?
Well, the nice thing is you can't lose it as there is no hardware token. You don't have to carry a key code around or a physical key or a smart card or any of those kind of things and lose it or forget it in your other wallet or lock one in a safe, all those kind of things. So our keys are directly in your device. It's in your phone. It's in your laptop. It's in your desktop. And if you ever lose one of those devices, any other device, they're all bound to you as the same identity. So if you lose your phone, you can just go on your laptop and delete your phone. And if you get a new phone, you can add the new phone. You don't have to call a help desk or the IT department. You're the master of your own domain, so to speak. And it's a very simple user interface. It would look just like you were on your Apple system and lost an iPhone and you wanted to delete it and add a new one. So it's a very simple interface. And now all those physical keys, separate physical keys, go away. And all you have is just the physical key in your own device. So the thing that made that possible is that all devices now, all modern devices that are coming out, have both an HSM TPM, the security module within them, or even buried within the chip. And they also have the full capability of doing biometrics. So fingerprint readers, face readers, and on and on. So that's really what we needed to be able to implement these. And that's what's come around in the last few years and certainly will be there going forward.
Okay, well, just a couple of quick questions. One of them, you talked about the biometric capabilities of the devices. Are there any limits? I mean, do you have to use the onboard built-in biometric device, or could it use one of the other, you know, third-party biometric devices for the user to log into their device to get ready to take the next step to authenticating to your system?
Whatever the device manufacturer allows you to use in logging into your device is okay with us.
All right. Very good. Well, my final question is, how far down market can you go? I mean, is your system one that's suitable only for the Global 1000, or are smaller organizations able to take advantage of what you're offering?
Smaller organizations can. In fact, we have a free version of the product. We're trying to do this to help the industry come along. And it's a fully implemented, fully supported product. We have companies with as few as 20 employees that are fully using the product, have implemented it, and are on their way.
Fantastic. Well, Tom, thanks so much for being here. Obviously, all good things must come to an end. We're running a little bit low on time, but I did want to give you a chance to tell the folks at home where they can learn more about Beyond Identity and maybe how organizations can get started.
I appreciate that. Yes. So go to our website, www.beyondidentity.com, and on there you'll be able to see what we're working on, both in the workforce as well as direct to customer applications that Lou, you were asking about earlier. So appreciate the time, and everybody stay safe out there.
Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the best dang enterprise podcast in the universe. So tune your podcaster to Twyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-hosts. Starting with our very own Mr. Brian Chi. Chibert, what's going on for you in this coming week, and where can people find you?
Well, you can always find me on Twitter at ADVNETLEB, Advanced Net Lab, and love to hear you. We've actually had all kinds of emails from different people making suggestions on what kinds of topics and people we ought to interview. Anyway, you know, you're also welcome to toss me an email. I'm Chibert at twit.tv, or better yet, why don't you use Twyatt at twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. We'd love to hear from you. I'm going to go and try and make this office in my new home a little less bouncy. It kind of sounds like an echo chamber right now. I found some really cool acoustic tiles that I'm going to paste on the wall behind me. I'm thinking I'm going to have behind me a map of the world from the 1800s, kind of sepia tone look. And then in front of me, I'm going to have one of the famous pictures from NASA, Earthrise from Tranquility Base. Ought to be fun. Anyway, looking forward to hearing from you folks. And I'm just starting to get the hang of this thing called Discord. Take care, folks.
Thanks, Jeeber. Well, we also thank Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, what's going on for you in the coming week, and where can people find you?
Well, I'm going to be doing research, talking to a lot of companies on a lot of different things. It's what I do these days. I hope to get a piece published over on Dark Reading. Take a look at for me over there. And let's keep the conversation going on Twitter. I'm at KG4GWA. Would love to hear from you. I've had a couple of companies reach out to me that way. I appreciate that. But I'd also love to hear from members of the Twyatt Riot. Let me know what you think, what you'd like to hear about, what you'd like to know more about. I'll look forward to seeing you on the interwebs.
Thank you, Curtis. Thank you to both of you for being here. Well, we also have to thank you as well. You are that person that drops in each and every week to watch and listen to our show to get your enterprise goodness, and want to make it easy for you to watch and listen to catch up on your enterprise and IT news. Go to our show page right now, twit.tv/twite. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes, the show notes, the co-host information, the guest information. And more importantly, next to those videos there, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Get the support the show by getting your audio version, your video version of your choice, and listening on any one of your podcast applications. We're actually on all of them, so definitely get the show and subscribe. Plus, you may have heard we have a major announcement, Club Twit. That's right. Well, what is it? Well, it's a member-only ad-free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed. Join the club for just $7 per month, and you'll get exclusive access to the members-only Discord channel. We have some great, amazing characters in there. We've had some great discussions all day long here in the Discord channel, so definitely check that out. Plus, join the club and be part of this movement because it's really fun, and it's fun to get be part of that group. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit. Now, after you subscribe, you can impress your friends, your family members, and your coworkers with the gift of Twit, because we talk about some fun tech topics on the show, and I guarantee they find them interesting and fun as well. Remember, you can always follow me on Twitter, LouMM. That's right. There I post some really great enterprise tech and enterprise tech tidbits, as well as I have some great discussions with people like you. And of course, more importantly, sometimes I post some of my work day, or my daily work items there as well that I do at Microsoft. And you can also check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post some latest and greatest ways you customize your Office solutions. And definitely check out Office add-ins and Office scripts. An easy way to actually create cross-platform macros and use JavaScript and TypeScript to do it. So definitely check that out. Now, remember, I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, because you know, we couldn't do this show with all the help from Twit. And I especially want to thank Leo and Lisa for all their support. And they continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech over the years, and we couldn't do the show without them. And I also want to thank all the engineers and staff at Twit. It's really amazing how much help and assistance everyone gives us, and we couldn't do the show without them. And I also want to thank Mr. Brian Chi one more time, because he's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer as well. He gets all the show bookings and all that during the show and after the show, and just keeps going, 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 and we couldn't do the show without him. So thanks so much, Chibert, for all your support. And before we sign out, I also have to thank our editor for today, Victor. Victor, you know, every week we give you a lot of work, and I appreciate how good you make us look. Thanks so much, Victor, for all your support. Of course, I want to thank Mr. Ant Pruitt. He is our TD for today, and he's not only our TD, but he's also an amazing host with some amazing shows on Twit. Ant, what's going on for you in the coming weeks over at Twit?
Well, I still got some great shows ahead, a couple tutorials, a couple interviews lined up. But this week I had a lot of fun creating some more eye popping portraits and just showing folks how to really make the eyes stand out. And that's for the folks that don't necessarily have blue eyes. Their eyes can stand out too, right? So go check it out, twit.tv/hop.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you, Annette. Well, until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep Twit.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode. If you would like to check out more about tech news, then you should check out Tech News Weekly with me, Micah Sargent, my co-host Jason Howell, where we interview the people making and breaking the tech news every week.